Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice in the Magnus Protocol. I'm here to let you know that Rusty Quill will be attending UK Games Expo at the Birmingham NEC this May the 29th to May the 31st. We are hosting two free shows, along with our friends at Monte Cook Games and Indie Boards and Cards. If you come along to the Monte Cook Games stand at the Expo, you will be able to demo the Magnus Archives role-playing game and the Magnus Protocol Mysteries game and grab a copy for yourself. You can find out more about our shows at rustyquill.com/expo, that's rustyquill.com/expo. You will need a ticket for entry to the UK Games Expo, but once inside, Rusty Quill shows and demos are 100% free on a first-come, first-served basis.
Rusty Quill presents... The Magnus Protocol. Episode 41, Internal Investigation.
Celia, look, I know we're behind on caseloads, but there's not much I can do about it on my own. We're 14 members down now, and I really think
that wasn't what I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Apology accepted. Although now you mention it...
What did you want to ask?
Have you heard anything from Alice?
Nothing. Not a word since she arrived in Berlin.
Oh, really?
Yes, really.
No texts? No emails?
No.
You're sure?
What are you implying, Gwen?
Nothing. When did you last check?
Gwen, there's no shame in being worried about her.
Hardly. I just know that if she were to call, it wouldn't be to my phone. So I thought it pertinent to check with you, just in case.
Oh, I'm sure she'd like...
Please don't. I've worked with Alice long enough to know how little she thinks of me.
I mean, you don't make it easy, but I'm sure she's fond of you, in her own way.
Well, be that as it may, the situation remains that what little rapport we may have once shared has very much ended now that I'm her superior. And as a result, I suspect that if she had contacted you from Berlin... She would have likely told you to keep me in the dark.
Oh, that's not true. Okay, she totally might do that, but I promise she hasn't called me. Was there anything else?
No, that's all for now, I think. You can get back to work.
Witness statement of Dr. Chloe Gamble, BSc, MBBS, MRC Path, DIP-RC Path, Forensic. Date of birth, 2nd February 1970. Occupation, criminal pathologist. Address, Greater Manchester Police HQ. This statement is true to the best of my knowledge. Dated 17th June, 1995. This is a confidential report to the coroner and should not be disclosed without permission. At approximately 9:30 a.m. on the 9th June 1995, at the request of Greater Manchester Police, I attended the scene of a suspicious death near Didsbury, Lancashire. I was logged into the outer cordon at 9:32 a.m. and was logged into the inner cordon at 9:41 a.m. by a PC and met by DI Betty Osborne, Principal Socco David Schaefer, and Senior Socco Grant Chapman. Mr. Schaefer provided background information. A neighbour reported sounds of a confrontation and chemical smells at approximately 2 a.m. and later reported seeing a body through a back window at 4 a.m. Paramedics attended and declared life extinct at 4:35 a.m. Police arrested suspect at scene. Upon entering, I saw the kitchen was filled with chemistry apparatus and broken glass on the floor, seemingly from a broken, oversized container with bloodstains. There were various residues on most surfaces, along with extensive diagrams and what looked like an MLM sales guide for Marconi Alchemics. The body of the deceased was lying in the doorway to the adjoining utility room, half covered with laundry. Fact of death. Having consulted with the senior investigating officer, DI Betty Osborne, I examined the body to verify the death. This was confirmed at 10:09 a.m. Scene examination. The body was of a middle-aged Caucasian woman. She lay on her right side in a fetal position, with her head towards the back door. The left arm was extended towards the door with slight flex. The right arm was pressed against the body with the right elbow flexed and the right hand clutched at the face. The legs were extended behind, with minimal rotation. Clothing. A floral knee-length dress, fully buttoned. A pair of bifocal glasses. One full-length leather apron tied around the back with Marconi Alchemics embroidery. Plastic eye protectors embossed with same logo. Pair of pink socks. Pair of pink shoes. Medium heel, no laces. Body was undressed and examined at scene with tapings and swabs obtained. Blood staining and contamination. Minor blood staining on right-hand collar. Dirt on left hand and both knees. Minor vomitus running from the right corner of the mouth. Blood staining under both sets of fingernails. No soiling. Body appears to be uniformly covered in sodium chloride. Swab taken. Adjacent scene. Body was covered in clean laundry. Minor blood staining and vomitus under head on right side. Body of deceased partially propped against washing machine. Tumble dryer door open with some clothes inside. Blood staining on large glass flask. Rigor mortis. Fully established in all muscle groups. Temperature. Reading at 10:32 a.m. Ambient temperature 30 degrees Celsius with thermometer reading 24 degrees. Signs of visible injury. 8 incised wounds of similar depth at nape of neck with 2 at larynx indicating strangulation. Protective clothing. Standard procedures observed. Logged out of inner cordon at 11:17 a.m. Logged out of outer cordon at 11:25 a.m. Exhibits list. Scene. Standardized swabs, plucking and tapes. See attached. Scraping from beneath nails on right and left hand. Swabs of indentations on neck. Sample of vomitus. Swab of blood from glass flask. Post-mortem examination. 10th July 1995, attended mortuary at Stepping Hill Hospital for special post-mortem of Alana Ward. Examination began at 8:20 p.m. Persons present were D.I. Betty Osborne, Principal Socco Warren Schaefer, Senior Socco Grant Chapman, D.C. Marco Mason, exhibits, and mortuary technician Kayla DeAngelis. Standard photographs were taken under my direction. Recognized decedent received in white signature-sealed body bag and wrapped in black plastic sheet. She was a well-nourished adult female, light build, 165 centimeter tall but weighing 105 kilograms, significantly exceeding weight expectations. Long dyed red hair with exposed brown and grey roots, shaved body hair with trimmed nails 0.1 centimeters long with signs of tearing. 2 vaccination scars over the left upper arm. Old curving scar below navel consistent with caesarean section. No tattoos. Post-mortem changes. Rigor mortis still firmly established. Weakly developed mobile primary hypostasis on right side with associated blanching. Signs of sharp force injury. Incised wounds at base of neck and larynx consistent with strangulation. Indentations recorded. Minor lacerations to face at point of contact with floor. Multiple markings consistent with phlebotomy on inside of left elbow. Angle of insertion indicates self-inflicted with no expertise. Extensive reddening around the neck suggests injuries inflicted whilst alive. Other signs of injury: head and neck, minor abrasion on right parietal scalp, major blunt crushing trauma to neck consistent with strangulation, trunk, minor abrasions consistent with insect activity. Internal examination. Scalp, stripped to nape of neck posteriorly. Skull coated in foul-smelling yellow residue. Sent to toxicology, likely sulfur-based, but no sign of cause. Skull, dura was stripped, no sign of fracture. Brain, entire organ appears to have been replaced with solid silver facsimile, but no sign of surgery. Entire organ removed with difficulty and passed to toxicology for further examination. Face, soft tissues dissected to the bone, no evidence of injury. Grey tone indicative of systemic shock or hypoxia. Mouth, tongue bitten, metallic discoloration in mouth lining. Sample sent to toxicology. Neck, heavy damage to larynx and trachea, consistent with strangulation. Bruising in strap muscles with hairline thyroid bone fracture and cartilage damage. Finger patterns recorded in skin. Chest, pleura was stripped. Significant metallic discoloration noted. Samples sent to toxicology. Ribs were flayed. No evidence of fracture but severe deformation of pleural cavity and surrounding tissue. Lungs. Exposure of pleural sac revealed it was filled with dense metallic deposit. Autopsy paused and additional biohazard procedures were enacted, leaving me as only physical presence. Incision into the pleural membrane released large amounts of liquid metal, suspected mercury. Sample sent to toxicology. Lungs entirely absent. No evidence of surgery. Heart. With great difficulty, organ was removed and cleaned, revealing what appears to be solid gold facsimile in its place. No signs of surgery, and pulmonary vessels were directly attached without scarring. Organ sent to toxicology under D.I. Osborne's supervision. Stomach. Undamaged beyond slight deformation from weight of replaced surrounding tissue. Contents consisted of one Cornish pasty, partial digestion. Intestines. Appear normal. No perforations, inflammation, or pathological changes. Liver. Entirely replaced by silvery, metallic facsimile. Organ removed for toxicology, but initial indications of tin. Kidneys. Entirely replaced by copper facsimiles. Organ sent for analysis. Bladder. Undamaged with no indication of tumors, inflammation, or stones. Generative organs. Womb, cervix, fallopian tubes, and ovaries fully removed. Scarring consistent with hysterectomy. No evidence of other trauma. Spleen. Dense and soft metallic facsimile of organ removed for analysis. Suspected lead. Severe deformation of surrounding tissue, likely as a result of excessive organ weight. Endocrine organs. All appear normal, but samples provided for toxicology due to prevalence of foreign bodies. Other organs. Gallbladder, replaced by metallic facsimile, suspected iron. Organ removed for testing. Additional notes. High-speed oscillating autopsy saw was damaged during Y incision due to unexpected foreign bodies. Difficulties introducing trocar for bodily fluid collection due to same. Organ weights. See attached. Note weights of facsimiles provided in lieu of missing organs. Post-mortem concluded at 2:30 a.m. 11th July 1995. Mortuary exhibits list. See attached. Toxicology. Complete toxicology report is still pending, but initial testing verifies visual observations of stated heavy metals. Histology. Each organ has been collected for further analysis, with conventional examination impossible. Spectroscopic analysis is underway. Time of death. Based upon temperatures recorded at scene, computed with Hentziger's nonogram, indicates a time of death at approximately 8 hours earlier, at 2 a.m. on 9th June 1995, but the large amount of metallic foreign bodies found in the decedent significantly reduced the reliability of this estimate. Conclusions. Damage to the throat and neck accompanied with indications of hypoxia are consistent with strangulation from the front via foul play. that stated the near-complete replacement of decedent's vital organs with metallic facsimiles appears to have somehow happened prior to death without surgery. I am given to understand that a suspect was arrested at the scene, but I assume there has been a clerical error as they were listed as having the same identity as the decedent. Extreme caution is advised when handling evidence related to the case due to confirmed presence of toxic materials. I have already insisted that all persons present at the autopsy and scene receive medical examination for poisoning. Results are pending. Personal comments. I don't know what I just witnessed. If any similar cases arise, do not contact me.
So, do I call this number, or... Right. Lena?
Obviously. Who else would be answering my personal mobile in the middle of the night?
How are you?
Irritated and impatient. What do you want?
I found this number and thought I would check to see who answered.
I see. Well, if that's all, then I shall go back to bed. I have curling practice in the morning.
Right.
And make sure you delete this number. I've no interest in any further late-night disturbances from you.
Yes. All right.
How are you finding it, Gwen?
Excuse me?
Is it everything you hoped?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Then you're doing better than I did when I started. It took me almost a year just to get things in order.
Well, it's better now.
Of course it is. The important thing is just keeping everyone safe. Do that and you're mostly there.
Right. Yes.
It's just a shame I didn't have more time to train my replacement before I...
Retired?
Moved to the private sector. How old do you think I am, Gwen? Don't answer that.
Look, since I have you on the line anyway, I was wondering if you could tell me...
Not over the phone. There's a reason I had you taking physical letters.
Fine.
I'll send you a postcard with a time and place. Come alone and bring cash.
All right.
And just to be absolutely clear, I would quite happily leave you in the bed you've made for yourself if I thought it wouldn't affect the others.
Understood.
And bring the bottle in my desk. It was a gift for someone and I'd like it back.
Yes. Yes, all right.
You drank it, didn't you?
Not all of it.
Oh.
Lena? Hello?
Roger, he's good.
Yeah, great, thanks. Four legs and everything.
I'm glad.
So, you said you could catch me up on what you were talking with Colin about?
Very well. We shall cut to the chase. Colin contacted me some months ago, wishing to learn more about your Friedrich program. He said its origins were here, and that your files mark me as the only safe Anzjäger in Berlin. This was, of course, very insulting, and you will agree untrue, yes?
No. Safe is not the word I would use.
You are afraid of me, yes?
Yeah.
Shoot the helm. Colin was pleasant. I liked him. And so I agreed to help him find his Friedrich.
So did you find him, or...?
Oh, yes. But also, no.
Right. Listen, Heinrich.
Heinrich.
Look, I'm real scared right now.
Danke.
But I've had a long flight and a rough few weeks, and it's bad enough reading all Colin's rambling without doing the cryptic doublespeak thing on top. So can we just not, for now? Please?
Very well. Entschuldigung. It has just been some time since I could... How do you say? Play the part?
Cheers. I appreciate it.
What I found was not much, but I have only been learning computers recently with Colin's help. I have been looking on the internet, and this has led me to believe Friedrich was never a person at all.
And why is that?
Because it is not a name. It is a Bezeichnung.
Sorry, I don't...
No, version, you know. Anton, Egger, Bertha, Caesar. My God, English. Version A, version B.
Wait. You're saying Friedrich, the guy I've flown all the way here to find, isn't even a guy. It's just, what, an update number? Mr. Foxtrot.
Yeah. Friedrich, Foxtrot, same thing. Program number 8.
But Colin had all these notes about a German programmer.
Yes, there was such a man who built your Freddy. The few references we found had the initials KS, so you see, not Friedrich.
Christ on a bike!
It is funny, yes?
No! No, it's not. Right. Well, this has been fun, Heinrich.
Sehr gut.
And I appreciate you not skinning me alive.
Bitte.
But I think I need to go and have a think about what to do now.
I did mention, I think, that I also found an address.
An address? For what?
I do not know. It was associated with their program designation. I thought it impolite to visit without Colin, but he is dead, so I will visit with you.
Listen, Heinrich, you really don't need to come with me. I'm sure you'd rather stay here in your toy abattoir.
Nonsense. You're friends now. I will visit with you.
No, really. You don't...
I insist.
Okay then.
Wunderbar. I will bring the chair.
Thanks.
Natürlich. Now, let us paint the town red.
All right then.
Protocol is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. The series is created by Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell and directed by Alexander J. Newell. This episode was written by Alexander J. Newell and edited with additional materials by Jonathan Sims. With vocal edits by Nico Vitesse, soundscaping by Meg McKellar, and mastering by Catherine Rinella, with music by Sam Jones. It featured Billy Hindle as Alice Dyer, Anuja Battersby as Gwen Bouchard, Lorianne Davis as Celia Ripley, Sarah Lambie as Lena Kelly, with additional voices from Jonathan Sims. The Magnus Protocol is produced by April Sumner, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell, Danny McDonough, Lynn C., and Samantha F.G. Hamilton, and associate producers Jordan L. Hawk, Taylor Michaels, Nicole Perlman, C.T.S. Staraven, and Megan Nice. To subscribe, view associated materials, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Alex here, founder and CEO of Rusty Quill Limited. In case you haven't heard, there is now a Magnus Archives novel. The Library of Jürgen Leitner is set in the world of the Magnus Archives and written by Nebula Award-winning author Premi Mohammed with our very own Jonathan Sims. The story follows Hugh, a university dropout desperate to find somewhere to belong, and his new job at an esoteric library. The books he must investigate for the enigmatic Jürgen Leitner are not normal, because the library is not a vault, sealed and silent, but a hive, alive, buzzing, and ready to sting. The Library of Jürgen Leitner releases October 27th, 2026, but you can pre-order it right now in the US and UK from your local bookshop or by using the link in the episode description. If you live outside of the UK or US, you may be able to make an international order for this first publication, but it depends on individual retailers' shipping policies.